And Mrs. Garvey, you have questions?
You said you joined Plantology because you thought it would do something for you. Were you impressed with Mr. Hubbard's background as published?
Very much so, yes.
Were you, when you joined, did you, were you told that auditing was confidential?
Yes.
And that it was based on a scientific technique?
Yes.
When you got into the Guardian office and saw how auditing was, the information was being used, did that not bother you in relationship to your own auditing information?
Yes, very much.
But you didn't have any, there wasn't anything you could do about it?
I didn't feel at the time that there was. I did do some questioning of the man that was in charge of the Information Bureau, which is the bureau basically that gathers all the information. In other words, the Public Relations Bureau would take it to the press or whatever, but the Information Bureau would gather it. There's also files, they're called B1 files, which is Branch 1 files. And a short time after I was in Scientology, I was asked to help go through these files. And at that time, I found that, well, let me just back up a little bit. When I first went into the Guardian's office and I saw auditing information being used, I was told that it was because these people were enemies of the church and that they were attacking the church and that they had to be stopped, which I didn't agree with totally, but it somehow, if you can understand the state of mind I was in, it made some sense to me, and I accepted it to a degree mentally. A short while later, I went through the Information Bureau files, at which point I found that it wasn't just the enemies of, or the people that were complaining about Scientology. Scientologists who were actively in Scientology, contributing great amounts of either time or money or both, files, auditing information were being kept in the files on them. Anything that was considered to be out security, which would mean that they left the back door open to the fact that they had sex with someone other than their husband, or that they had a homosexual experience in their background, or that they were involved in anything that Scientology considered to be something that could be used against Scientology.
When you challenged some of the policies, what happened to you?
I was sent to ethics on various occasions and sent to cramming.
You were sent to cramming. What happens in cramming?
That's where you're shown policies on whatever it is you're complaining about, why it's okay to be done, until you have this realization, whether you actually have it or not, or you say you do. If you say you do, then it's fine.
So have you actually seen written policies on the fair game, the blown student, and some of the other techniques by Mr. Hubbard?
Yes.
Have you seen a written policy that is in the Guardian office on lying?
I haven't seen the actual policy. I've just seen it practiced.
What were you told when you joined the Guardian office that your duty was going to be?
It was going to be establishing Apple schools and Narcan on drug programs was my main two interests. The Citizens Commission on Psychiatric Abuses was also mentioned. I didn't realize exactly what it meant at the time, but
your job, you were told your duty was going to be to establish these worthwhile community organizations.
Yes.
How much were you paid for that?
Oh, it varied depending on the gross income of the week. I was one of the highest executives for a three-state area, and I made anywhere between nothing to maybe $20-$25. An average week would probably be about $6.
You were the highest paid. Good, good.
Well, no, one of the highest paid for three states.
Three states.
$26, you say?
No, the average income was about six. I said sometimes, some weeks it was you were paid nothing or maybe 20, 25. The average was about six.
How many hours a week did you work?
Again, that varied. Probably 12, 15 hours a day most of the time. Sometimes, during one time period when the Hartwells were causing what's called in Scientology a flap. In other words, they were going to the press and that type of thing. We worked for about 23 or 24 days without a day off, 12 to 14 hours a day. And myself and Carol Garrity, who I already mentioned, became ill at that time. We had bad colds and that, and we were taken into the assistant guardian's office, who's in charge of the guardian's office, and we were told that the reason we had become sick was because of the FBI.
What year was this particular, do you remember? Hartwell could probably tell you.
I believe it was 79.
Okay. When you said you got out of the guardian office, were you routed out or did you just walk out?
Well, I simply just said that I was leaving and that I had signed what's called a 2.5-year contract. I wasn't on a billion-year contract, and my contract expired, and I worked for some weeks without being on a contract. I activated a new contract, but because it was only in effect a couple of weeks, and I just simply said I was going and that I would help, but that I couldn't continue the schedule I was in and maintain my marriage, and I wanted to stay married and keep my children. So I just basically just walked out. And
so they
allowed
that?
Yeah, I was allowed back in, and I did quite a bit of work for them. That was part of the agreement.
How much longer before you left?
About a year.
And why did you leave? What finally freed you from the organization?
Well, I guess it was just an accumulation of many things. I saw so many things, and I saw it becoming worse and worse. I also saw that the people who had been represented to me as honest, ethical, law-abiding people were indeed guilty of crimes, which I certainly did not agree with. I saw that after being sort of free from there, even though I was connected to a degree, I began to be able to look at exactly what was happening with myself and the people that I knew, and I saw that I was certainly no better than when I got in Scientology. In fact, I was much worse. I was terrified to even discuss the possibility of leaving Scientology with my own husband. I was afraid that he would stay in Scientology. I was afraid that he would write me up to the guardian's office and that they would then come and take me away somewhere because I had so much information. Guardian's office staff members were heavily, under security at all times, and I signed, I don't know how many waivers of how I would never ever talk about the guardian's office to anyone, and if I did, I would have to pay them a lot of money.
Your husband obviously was having doubts at the same time?
Yes, I was unaware of it at the time until we discussed it.
Can you describe a little bit of the harassment that you received once you left, and were you given a freeloader's debt?
I was never given a freeloader's debt, no. Once I left, I was received a lot of phone calls, but people would just call and hang up. I also received a note in my car with the words "Watch it" on it. Also, a note was left in my mailbox that said "Die." And I received several phone calls where my husband works at night, and I would receive phone calls like 1 or 2 in the morning where a male voice would say "Die," and then they would hang up. Also, at various times throughout the night, someone would knock at my front door, and there would be nobody there.
That's probably good enough. Did you have to fill out a security check? That thing that's got 100 some questions or something like that on?
Many of them, yeah.
Many of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, also on the harassment type thing, at one point after I'd left Scientology, the man that was in charge of the Information Bureau, who I already mentioned, he and I were quite good friends. He and I got together even though I had left Scientology. I trusted him to... In other words, I wasn't really afraid to meet with him. I didn't think that he would try to kidnap me or anything. But when we got to discussing the harassment that I had received, and he tried to convince me that Michael Flynn, my attorney, was the one responsible for it. Oh, yeah, before I came here, I'm afraid to fly. And before I came here, I received a phone call of a crash. I assume it was supposed to be a plane crash. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was just a crashing noise.
And you needed that before you flew, like, I think you're where I am.
I thought about it as the plane took off.
Evidence of that type may be relevant.
Who would know of your fear of flying?
It would have been in my auditing file.
And referring to the mayor's earlier comment about whether the leopard has changed its spots, that particular evidence of the last 5 minutes may be relevant because it's right up to
before she came today, or this week.
When did you leave? Let me just say, when did you leave, just so we can get this in the right time frame? When did you leave the guardian's office?
I left the guardian's office in 1979, officially as a staff member, but I was connected in various ways up until July of 1980.
You left Scientology July 1980?
That's correct.
Thank you. Mr. Garvey?
Did you actually see the written report on the fair game against the number of people, Mr. Walters or Mr. and Mrs. Hartwell?
Well, there was various programs, and I saw...
You actually did see some of those reports?
Yes, I also saw copies of Mr. Hartwell's pre-clear auditing information, copies being made of it, and there was an order on Tanya Burden to take her information to the press, and attached to the order was copies of her auditing information.
Mr. Hatchett.
Ms. Peterson, listening to you, I think this is a good question to ask you. Were you aware, before coming here, that certain people were going to testify that you yourself looked at the order or was involved in the dirty tricks? Did you know you were going to face them when you came here?
Yes.
Congratulations. That's what I want to say to you. You must be very much dedicated and convinced to come here to testify under such conditions. That's my first comment.
Thank you.
Seeing in the guardian's office on the heavy security, that must have been a place of great power. Did you have that feeling much of the time?
Yes. Only to the outside world of Scientology, in other words, to other Scientologists and to the outside world. As far as feeling powerful within the guardian's office, I suppose there was feelings of that, but you always knew that you were under orders from the higher-ups.
Can you give me an idea, after looking at that order, or some orders on people, if you can, from the best of your memory, like, for example, the Guardian office attack on Michael Flynn.
Yes.
It must have been written up, step one, step two, step three.
Yes, there was also a program to get Michael Flynn disbarred. I can't remember if it was the same program as the what was called the Oscar program or not, but I remember, I didn't read all the steps on it, but there was steps on there to get him disbarred. There was also a step to send letters to former colleagues of his about how horrible he was and that he had this bizarre background that they weren't aware of.
Okay. So this guardian office undoubtedly had a large budget to do all the things it's supposed to be able to do. Can you give us an idea of what it costs to run these types of clandestine operations?
I don't know how much it costs. It costs a lot of money. I know that if there was ever a request for anything, plane fare to go back to Boston or to fly in somebody from Salt Lake City to spy on Tanya Burden, there was always money. When I was in the actual organization as opposed to the guardian's office, you couldn't even get paper, money for paper to write down the auditing information. In other words, the auditor, as they're auditing, you would write down what the person was saying, and the staff who made anywhere between nothing and $6 a week had to chip in money to buy paper for this to occur.
Well, yet there was always plenty of money to do these other operations.
Yeah, there sure was.
And in a timely fashion, they never had to wait.
You could get it right away.
It was interesting to listen to you about the vetting materials. I think Mr. Flynn stated that he's going to introduce this as evidence. Did you not, Mr. Flynn?
Yes.
Okay.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Hatcher.
I've got my answer already. Thank you. Did you have an idea about this safe environment fund for protection of indicted Scientologists. That must have been a heavy fund, too.
Yeah, there was, I'm not sure exactly how much, but many, many thousands of dollars. Another really interesting thing is that we were drilled to tell any public official, the press or anyone, that we did not operate the Safe Environment Fund while we were on what's called post time. In other words, we were to say that it was totally separate. It was something we were doing on our own time. We were not allowed to say that, in fact, it was a big part of our job.
Okay. The Guardian office was directly responsible for the operation of Apple schools.
Yes.
But yet you denied this.
Yes.
Could he tell you why?
We were told that the reason why was that if the government and various officials found out that Scientology was running it, that there would be a lot of problems because the government was out to get Scientology.
Do you know for a fact then whether or not these schools may have been up to any state accreditation standards?
The ones that I was responsible for were, yes, they were supposed to be. Whether they were or not, I don't know, you know, everywhere else, but I know mine were.
That I meant by a licensing agent, you know, of some state, county, or whatnot.
Yes, we were, as I said, all the schools that I was responsible for all met up to all the codes and everything.
Can you give me an idea of what the average parent may pay for the education of their child at that particular school, any Apple school, under your jurisdiction?
I think it was about $120 or $130 a month, which at the time was about what everybody was paying for other schools in the area. It was about the same.
That's all. Thank you.
Shoemaker, do you have any questions?
Yeah, Mrs. Peterson, I'd like to reiterate a couple of comments that you made because I think they're extremely significant. So if I'm being repetitive, please bear with me.
Sure.
Can you describe the overall purpose of the Guardian's office, please?
Well, as I said, there's various bureaus, and each bureau has sort of a different purpose. But the main purpose, there's probably a couple, the main one is to keep everybody other than Scientologists away from Scientology. In other words, if a public official walks into the front door of the Fort Harrison, the person that then comes over to take you on a tour is a Guardian's office staff member if they know that you're a public official. They don't want anyone outside of Scientology to know what's going on. In fact, in the Guardian's office, other Scientologists don't even know. Most Scientologists have no idea, for instance, what happens to their pre-clear information. Another thing is to take care of the press, to make sure that Scientology is well thought of so that it can expand and grow.
And your responsibilities while you were in the Guardian's office run the division relating to these various types of special groups?
Yes, although, as I said before, I got involved in a lot of other things because of the lack of personnel.
But your responsibility, though, was, in fact, control over those groups.
Yes.
And that includes the Apple School, Narconon, Applied Scholastic Institute, Citizens Commission for Human Rights, the Jarrah Society.
Yes.
And the Save Environment Fund.
Right.
And it was all, and it would be uniformly set up throughout the country, throughout the world, that those types of activities would be in the Guardian's office.
Yes.
You had made reference to the fact that Mr. Hartwell's auditing files and so forth were sent to the Las Vegas office. Could you tell me where they came from, if you know firsthand, and the year that they were sent?
Okay.
I'm sorry, Burden. I beg your pardon.
Oh, Tanya Burden?
Yes.
That was sent from Clearwater. Actually, it was sent from Clearwater to Los Angeles to the United States Guardian's office, and then sent to the Las Vegas organization, and that was in, I believe it was 1979. It's either 78 or 79.
The types of operations that you described, would your boss or who was head of the Guardian's office in Las Vegas have the authority to do one of those himself, write one up and do it himself without instructions from higher up?
No, you could write out a program. However, it had to be sent to the United States Guardian's office to be approved. You weren't allowed to do anything on your own. In some instances, it would not only go to the United States Guardian's office, but it would go to Worldwide Guardian's office. It would depend on the type of program and who was involved, that type of thing.
So any of those types of organizations would have had to been signed off on by someone, by the headquarters of the Guardian's office?
That's correct. In fact, most of the training the Guardian's office staff members received, they received at the United States Guardian's office.
You had made reference a while ago that some of the conversations that Mr. Alan Hubbard was having with Mr. Hartwell was in fact being taped.
Yes.
And Mr. Hartwell had no knowledge of that.
As far as I know, he didn't know.
How do you know that they were being taped?
I saw the taping equipment on Mr. Hubbard at one point. I also heard Mr. Hubbard transcribing it several times.
And it was the type of equipment that would be hidden under clothes?
Yes, I happened to walk into someplace I wasn't supposed to at one point, and he had his shirt off and was pulling this on. The tape was edited down also at one point.
And the Save the Environment Fund, which was set up, I believe, as you described it, for the purpose of was it donations, or how were the funds being raised for the Save the Environment Fund to provide legal funds for the Scientologists that were indicted?
In a variety of ways. They would have rallies and meetings and that type of thing, and talk about the indictees and how much money it was costing, and then the people would give donations.
Would it have been forced from individuals?
Well, I don't think it was ever probably physically forced. They were made to feel that if they didn't donate the money, that they were letting down the organization, and then what would happen to the organization if these top people weren't there to defend them against the government? What would happen?
Were records kept or any kind of published list in terms of who gave what or anything such as that? I mean, that would be available, for instance, to just the general membership.
You mean to other Scientologists?
Yes.
I really don't know. I don't remember if there was or not.
Were most of their efforts directed towards the members in the church or towards public people, people that are outside of Scientology, in terms of rallies and so forth?
Mostly other Scientologists, although I believe that they made some sort of affiliation with other groups and stuff that were interested.
But it was clearly stated that was the purpose of raising of the funds?
Yes. Yeah.